Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is... My name is...
Dr. Drake.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Oh, yeah, people.
Yes, sir.
What a do to do. Let's go.
Fight
started? Yeah, we're getting out of this.
Oh, snap. This is what we do. Talking sports. 12th man, what a beautiful, fantastic day. It's Thursday. Just having a good time, man. I'm in New York here, obviously, the 9th of November. Time is flying. I'm checking in on my Jets, Giants, Knicks, all that fun stuff. So we are going to have a fantastic show. So without further ado, let me check in with my partners, my guys, my assist folks. We're going to check it in with JQ. How are you feeling this evening, sir?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. I can't complain. You know, Dre up there in New York doing that drive run. So him and Ryan Seacrest can drop the ball next month. He ain't fooling nobody. I see you. I see you, DJ Dre.
Doing it big.
I'm just waiting for Kelly to make that call, man. So whenever she's ready to make that call, man, I'm here. So that's what it's all about.
That's how the high rollers roll.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more because I don't want to spoil the surprise to yet, man. But it'll be good, man, to say the least, man. So fun times for sure. Mr. Rob Ford, how you feeling this evening, sir?
Oh man, doing great. I'm in a little old Austin, Texas, compared to Andre's big time status being in New York City. Checking in on little old University of Texas. So we got every corner covered. You know, JQ in the ATL. Andre in New York City, and I'm down here in the middle of the state of Texas.
That is what's up.
Yeah,
I don't think Texas is little O, though. I don't think it's little old Texas, Rob. I'm going to have to correct you on that one, bro. But, you know, I get the sarcasm with that, too. But it's good, man. It's good times, man. We're having a great time, man. I can't wait to kind of fill you in, guys, because a lot of things happening, especially in the Big Apple here, so the city never sleeps, man. But it's been pretty fantastic. So we'll talk about that as well. As always, we want to throw out the numbers. And again, I'm a little nervous about certain things, but I'm always going to throw those out. If you want to reach out to you boys, the 424-243-9519 number is always available, especially for Big Mike. Hope to hear from him soon. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12 THMAN Sports. And last but not least, we are on Facebook, facebook.com/12thmansports, or type in Talking Sports with the 12th Man. You will find us as well. All right, gentlemen, right out the gate, we are ready to kick off some college football predictions. So this is great, man. And I know, JQ, we're here for you, bro, man. We're here to kind of be here for you, man. So we'll get to that as well. And so, let's kick it off.
That game was.
Yeah, I know. It's just one of those things, man. We'll talk about that, too. Yeah. But let's kick it off. Some really good matchups, guys. So, Notre Dame, number three, is going to be at the undefeated number 7 Miami. This is a fantastic matchup. So, JQ, I am going to kick it off with you, man. What are your thoughts about this game? And hopefully we'll talk about Ohio State in a quick second, too. So, go ahead, man. Kick us off, man.
Yeah, I felt like what's going with me the last couple of weeks, like whoever I want to pick, I should just do the opposite because it's just not working out that great for me. But I'm going to that was really impressive by Miami. I thought Virginia Tech, you know, with that boy Foster defense would give them problems, and they came out just ready to roll. But that Notre Dame team is flat out playing, and, you know, I'm not a Notre Dame fan by any stretch of the imagination, but at some point you got to get credit where credit is due. I expect Miami to load that box more and try to stop that run game because they really aren't, you know, a passing team. They're a run team. But they got a lot of talent on another Notre Dame team. And I'm gonna roll with Notre Dame this week in a close game, you know, maybe 3 or 4 points on the road.
Yeah, okay. JQ's rolling with Notre Dame. Is this the opposite, JQ, or is it straight up right here? Where are you going with?
Actually, that one was straight up.
It's all good. Rob, what say you on this matchup, sir?
Well, I mean, Notre Dame is obviously, from an offensive standpoint, Wimbush, their running game, that offensive line has just been phenomenal and almost impossible to stop. Georgia is about the only team that came close this season to really slowing them down. But
yeah.
I like the way Miami is playing defensively here, and Miami's front seven is no slouch. They're playing really good on that side of the ball. I actually think they can pull off the upset at home, and I think it's going to be a really close football game. And I like Miami by about 3 points at home, pulling off the upset and stay undefeated.
Rob
okay.
is picking Miami. Now I'm kind of with JQ on the Notre Dame pick because I think that Miami has a couple of stretches where that offense kind of goes through some lulls, So
mm-hmm.
it's going to be good, So. That's what I'm kind of thinking, too, what's going to happen, too, because I don't think I think it's going to be an interesting matchup, man, but I'm going to go with you, JQ, and thinking that Notre Dame is going to pull us out, too. So we'll say that plays out, Rob. So good job on that. Our next game is going to be number 12, Michigan State, at number 13, Ohio State. So I've got some thoughts about this. I'm going to let Rob kick off with this one, JQ, so stay tuned, because you wonder if Ohio State is going to be definitely prep because of what happened last week. So are they going to be ready to roll? And is Michigan State going to be running into kind of like a little bees in the trap here? But JQ, stay tuned. Rob, what are your thoughts on this game, man?
I think Ohio State responds and bounces back from the game on last week. You know, Ohio State the week before had a big win at home, coming from behind to beat Penn State. And a lot of times human nature kicks in and, you have a letdown. The following week. I don't think they're as bad as that loss to Iowa on last week. Iowa obviously played a phenomenal football game, very fundamentally sound in that win on last week. But I think Ohio State responds at home, and I don't think it's going to be a rout. I think Michigan State's hanging around with their defense, but I'm liking Ohio State to win 27-21.
Buckeye Nation, it's okay. Go ahead, Rich. Okay, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, we're struggling a little bit right now, but Rob hit it on the head. If you want to take another step forward, Penn State also lost that Michigan State game. I think sometimes you have that kind of gladiator kind of matchup, especially with young kids. They got beat up in that game, a lot of high energy, a lot of high emotion. And, Penn State, of course, played much better against Michigan State than Ohio State did. But I'm agree with Rob. I think Ohio State bounces back. I think they finally understand that they got to keep J.K. Dobbins in the game and let him be their feature back. And I just don't believe that J.T. Barrett has that same game two games in a row. He came way back down to earth after a huge game against Penn State. And you can't underestimate that targeting ejection by Bosa. After that happened, they were really hardly getting any rush. He's their best pass rusher, and I think he's going to come back with a vengeance. I don't think it's going to be a route. I think it's somewhere where Rob talks about maybe like 28-24. Where they hope Michigan State off at the end.
Yep, good call. I agree. All right, gentlemen, so let's move forward here, fast forward to Oklahoma State, at Iowa State. So what say you on this game, JQ?
Ah, man, I was on the Iowa State bandwagon. I was not understanding how they were underdog at West Virginia. But that West Virginia team, rose up and bit them. That Oklahoma State defense, is playing better, but not, you could, wouldn't know that from that Oklahoma game. That was just a ridiculously phenomenally arena football style college football game last week in Bellum. But I think Oklahoma State finds a way. I think Iowa State can play decent defense, but I think that offense is still challenged. And that Oklahoma State offense is clicking right now. I'm going to go with Oklahoma State in a very close game, 3-point game, 27-24 Oklahoma State.
Nice. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I like Oklahoma State in this game, too. Just as JQ mentioned, I think it's going to be a really close football game. I've actually gone back and forth on this one, but I just don't think Iowa State will be able to keep up with Oklahoma State offensively like the way Oklahoma did on last week. I expect to have a high-scoring football game, though. I'm thinking Oklahoma State puts up like 41 and Iowa State 31.
Nice. This is interesting to say the least here. We got number one Georgia, which is another just amazing thing for them to be doing their thing, and the number 10 Auburn. So, and I hate to say this, JQ, but I think the Ohio State loss kind of made them focus in too, to say, all right, you know, don't get too caught up in last week's win or, you know, whatever, because you have to kind of still keep that to train going here. So what do you think about this matchup? I'm going to start with Rob on this. And is Auburn kind of poised to kind of do the upset on this particular matchup, or is Georgia going to go in and kind of roll, Rob?
Well, I think they got a shot, but I'm going to go with Georgia on the road. Oldest rivalry in the South here, big-time matchup. I think both teams really gets up for this football game. I think it's going to be a really close game here. The quarterback for Georgia, I'm really impressed with his poise as a freshman. And, of course, their defense is playing lights out. I like Georgia on the road here. It's going to be a really close football game, I think. I'm looking at a score somewhere around 23-17 Georgia.
Wow. Nice. JQ.
Yeah, I went back and forth with this one because I like that Auburn football team. But the reason why I give the edge to Georgia is because Gus Malzahn is going to find a way to sabotage Auburn just like he did in Baton Rouge against LSU when they had the lead and let Auburn come back, because it was run into the middle and go deep and no intermediate passes. You just can't do that. I think he's going to find a way to mess it up again. I'm going to take Georgia in a close game on the Plains at Auburn.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice. Me as well taking Georgia. All right, guys, another intriguing matchup, number 20, Iowa, at number 8, Wisconsin. And you got to think, is this a situation where Iowa's flying high and Wisconsin has a lot to prove, because some may say on their schedule they haven't really played anybody, so this is a great opportunity for them to prove themselves. But, again, it's an opportunity for Iowa to kind of submit their claim. So what do you think about this game? And I'm going to kick it to you, Rob, about this and kind of kick us off as far as this particular matchup.
Well, I'll tell you, this is going to be a smash mouth, a bunch of corn-fed boys out there playing football Iowa against Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin stays undefeated. Seeing the way Iowa played against Ohio.
You said that?
Yeah, I think Wisconsin stays undefeated and beat Iowa in this game. It's going to be a close football game.
Wow.
I think Wisconsin seeing the way Iowa played on last week is really going to help them stay motivated for this football game. And I think they stay undefeated. I'm looking at 30-21 Wisconsin.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that many points, but I agree. It's going to be smash mouth, you know, Midwest corn-fed, you know, battle royal, so to speak. Oh, what a play. Watching the game. But, yeah, I think the same thing that happened to Ohio State and Penn State, I think may happen to Iowa. You get all that, oh, my goodness, you select Ohio State. Ohio State can't cover the tight end for whatever reason. I think Wisconsin watches that. They say, okay, this is our chance. After Iowa, you know, beats Ohio State like that, you know, we've been put down and said we haven't played anybody, to your point, Dre. You get Iowa rolling in, and I feel like Wisconsin wins, but I don't think either one of them are going to be able to score points like that. I think it's going to be more like a 21-13 Wisconsin win.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Okay.
Am I the one really help Wisconsin, beating Iowa and if they win the Big Ten Championship, those teams in the top four, at least one of those top four teams at the moment, are going to lose the football game. And, you know, where it comes, you know, we know Georgia and Alabama has to play against each other at some point. And although there's a good chance both of them may still remain in the playoffs, but one of those four teams is going to lose. I mean, Notre Dame still got a tough schedule coming up here as well. Clemson still got an ACC championship game. There are a lot of things that could work out in Wisconsin's favor here. They beat Iowa and win the Big Ten championship. If they do that, which is still a big if, they still have a very good chance of making it to the playoffs.
Wow. All right. Am I the only one that thinks that Iowa is going to come in and beat Wisconsin? Man, maybe I am. Okay. Interesting. All right. We'll see.
That's what makes it fun.
That they're going to be ready for him too. I know. It's pretty much anyone's game, so we'll keep this going as well. But I think it's going to be a situation too where, you know, Iowa does have a lot to prove as well, and I know Wisconsin definitely has a lot to prove. So this is going to be a nice, like you said, Rob, clash of the Titans and a lot of the cornfed guys on their thing, man. So all right, let's move on. Number 2, Alabama at number 16, Michigan State. it's amazing. I know Dan Mullen was a pretty high commodity right now, but I don't know what's happening. Mississippi State is kind of doing their thing here, going back to the Dak Prescott days. So, again, what is Nick Saban, I mean, Saban going to do for this game? Thank you.
Come on, man. Come on. Alabama. I mean, Alabama, man. They're going to win this game. I mean, Mississippi State has no chance. I mean, at home, they have a – okay, I won't say no chance. So you're saying there's a chance. They have a slight chance. But it's super slight. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go Alabama. They're focused. And like I said, we talked about last week when those first rankings came out, them being number two with Georgia being number one with everything that Alabama has done. I know it's not a lifetime achievement award, but they got to believe that they take that as a slight and understand they're going to go to Mississippi State. And I think they drag Mississippi State by 21 points.
21 points. Wow. Rob, is JQ off that? Or do you think he's pretty accurate with that?
I think he's very – I actually, looking at my notes here, I have Alabama 31-10 over Mississippi State, so I have my exactly 21 points as well. Obviously, Nick Fitzgerald presents a, you know, a huge dimension to Mississippi State, but that won't be enough against Alabama. They're just too strong. On both sides are in the trenches. Their offensive line, their defensive line will be too much for Mississippi State.
There it is.
Right.
All right. We got number 10.
Uh-oh. Are we losing a little bit, Dre?
Yeah.
Yo, sorry.
Yeah, you got to go back to the other spot. Yep.
All right, here we go, yeah. Go ahead and call this game, but as I try to get my spot here. Number six, TCU at number five, Oklahoma. Go ahead, JQ.
Ah, man, that's just another one that I'm sure me and Rob both go back and forth on because that TCU defense normally always comes to play. But as much as I don't like this dude, if you're going to give me the best player on the field, I think, and the one that has the most magic, that's Baker Mayfield, playing in Oklahoma, I got to go with Oklahoma. I think it's going to be a close game. These games are going to be really good this weekend. It's going to be something like 34-28. I think Oklahoma wins.
34-28. Nice. Good, Rob.
I agree. I think it's going to be a really good football game. I think TCU is going to present a lot of challenges for Oklahoma, really on both sides of the ball. Kenny Hill's having a phenomenal year, and also TCU's defense will probably be the best defense that Oklahoma has seen this season. So I think they're going to present a lot of challenges for Oklahoma. But I think in the end, Oklahoma prevails. Baker Mayfield, you know, stays in that Heisman contention. And this is another team that could possibly, by the time season ends, sneak back into that top four as well if they keep winning. I like a close football game here, 31-27, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma knows what's good for them. They're going to play well for this game too as well. So I agree with both you guys on that. All right, let's wrap it up, guys, with number 11, USC. And at the Colorado. So, again, are you still on the Sam Darnold bandwagon there, Rob, or what's the deal with this game?
Well, I think Sam Darnold has played his best football the last 2 weeks. And when you look at the way he played against Arizona State and then last week in beating Arizona, he looked like some form of himself or what we saw in last season. Obviously, his draft stock is fluctuating a little bit, and he's not the consensus number one draft pick. He could possibly work his way back up to that. But, I mean, as of right now, you got about five or six quarterbacks that are potentially going to go in the first round. And
wow.
So this is going to be a very deep quarterback. Like you look at Mason Rudolph, Oklahoma State, Baker Mayfield, both of those guys have worked their way up to the first round draft talk status. Lamar
yep.
Jackson, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen. So at the moment, you got about six QBs that can potentially be in the first round, scattered throughout the first round in this
yep.
year's draft. But getting back to the game, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to digress. But but yeah, I like that's a little draft preview for our people. But everybody knows I get excited when we talk about the draft. But yeah, I like Sam Darnold on the road to go on and beat Colorado in this game. I think it's going to be a 38-17 kind of win USC.
You know, we know that
yeah,
Rob was short a lot of Rob was showing a lot of love for Cleveland right there, giving us some quarterbacks too. So you're saying there's a chance. They got to get a quarterback. They can even draft two.
Cleveland, you can't mess it up again.
We got to draft two.
They can't because they're Cleveland. They can absolutely mess up again because they're Cleveland. I agree.
They got two choices. Go ahead.
I agree. And as long as the USC players don't hit any of the dispensaries while they're out there, I think they should win that game pretty easily. I mean, Colorado had a nice run last year, but they lost so much talent. I think USC, I mean, and you just can't walk on and put your jersey on and say we got more talent, Ohio State.
Sure.
But I still think USC still finds a way to win.
Boy. JQ is still taking shots at Ohio State. So, without further ado, we're kind of right here. And, shout out to Katie. I know she's a huge Ohio State fan, so she's still in your pain too, JQ. But on the flip side, I guess, the question is Urban Meyer burnt out at Ohio State? And there's some rumblings that, you know, he's really good friends with your favorite person, Bill Belichick, Rob. So, you hear some rumblings about, you know, he's won his championship, in the SEC. You know, he's got his title here for Ohio State. So what say you? Do you think he's kind of burnt out, JQ, since you're close to the program? Tell us your thoughts about that, bro.
You know, I'm not sure, but I think he's entered in that area where he was at Florida, where you've won a title and you still got high expectations and you feel like you've underachieved. And it's hard to say he's underachieved, but with the talent he's had, you see getting to the NFL, that, you know, I think he's only won one Big Ten title, which is just hard to fathom, given the amount of talent he's had and the records they've had. I don't know if he's burnt out, but I do think that, you know, some of his luster and some of his magic is off his name is wearing off, because if Nick Saban wins a big game like that, the next week his team doesn't come out and look totally unprepared. And that's what they look like. They look like they didn't even know they were playing Iowa that week. Or anybody for that matter. So, it's frustrating for Ohio State fans. I won't say he's burnt out yet at this point. I think he's in that area, though, where he was at Florida, where he's got to find a way to, after having a really big class that did big things for him, to keep that magic going and not kind of rest on your laurels and be able to get back into the swing of things. So I'm going to reserve judgment on saying that he's burnt out at this point. I don't think that is. I think they had, from top to bottom, they had an awful week last week at Iowa. So whenever you go out there and have that kind of week, and given his background, you're going to have those kind of talks. But that's why this Michigan State game, and more importantly, that game against Michigan on Thanksgiving weekend, is important. It's going to determine a lot if he truly is burnt out, if he still has his finger and pulse on the program like he should.
You're saying there's a chance. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, obviously, JQ's a lot closer to following Ohio State than I am. But I agree. I think it's too early to say that. I think it's going to be. I think we'll find out here in the next couple of weeks how they respond, and I think that's what tell us a lot about the status of Urban Meyer and where he is with the program. Obviously, we all know the situation in Florida and how he got burnt out. I mean, he is a guy that goes in really hard, and a lot of coaches. I think a lot of coaches struggle with that actually. As far as the amount of time they spend in their organizations, in their program, and it's very easily to get burnt out. And sometimes you need to step away from it for a little while and kind of refresh. But I think it's too early to tell. I think we'll find out here in the next couple of weeks and see how that team responds from that beatdown he got against Iowa. Mm.
Since I'm in New York, I got. Before you guys, but good call on that. And keep an eye on Mr. Urban Meyer, because I agree with both of you guys as far as, we don't quite think he's there yet, but I do wonder if he's kind of distracted for some stuff too. So, again, he's been to the top. Something else, he has to have another challenge, I think. So we'll see how this team is going to respond to that this week as well. So keep an eye on that, JQ. We got you, bro. Let's talk about NFL predictions here, and hopefully you're still here. I am on the 32nd floor, Rob, so hopefully I'm not going in and out. Let's talk about
you're good now.
Really,
yeah, that's how high rollers roll, man. The penthouse.
No.
I know, Rob, that's what I said, 32nd floor.
No, it's all good. Let's talk about this. This is a really, really good game. Let's
DJ
talk about the game. He's been playing extremely well. Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah. Making sure. I was making sure. So let's talk about the Saints, who have had a nice little resurgence. I know Rob is probably happy about that because early in the season, I'm sure you were kind of having some different thoughts. And then you got the Bills, who surprisingly are looking pretty good with that defense. Both teams have been playing well defensively. And obviously the Bills add that move, getting Kelvin Benjamin from the Panthers, and try to spruce up the offense and have another threat. So now, Rob, what do you think about this? The Saints are going into hostile territory, and I think the Bills are going to be prepared, but this is going to be a really good game. So go ahead, sir. What do you think about this?
Well, obviously, Sean McDermott, former defense coordinator with Carolina Panthers, is somewhat familiar with the Saints. And obviously, this is a different Saints football team. As JQ mentioned, starting off the season looking very atrocious in those first two losses. But this Saints rookie class has been very phenomenal. And I don't know if it just took them a couple of games to kind of wake up. But when Marshawn Lattimore is looking like a Pro Bowl as a rookie, he's, you know, really locking down one side of the football field. And the Saints got somewhat lucky in the draft, too. Lattimore, best corner in the draft, fell to him at 31. Best offensive lineman in the draft fell to him at 32. And how often does the best offensive tackle fall all the way to 32 in the draft? And Ryan Ramczyk. And then the way Alvin Kamara is playing. And Marcus Williams, a safety from Utah as well, has also been playing very well. They hit the jackpot in the draft, and it's really really helped them. But historically, the Saints don't travel well, don't play well in these kind of conditions. And anytime you're playing against a team outdoors in the north, you always want to check the weather. And right now, we're looking at a game that's probably going to be in the 40s with a chance of precipitation in Buffalo. And historically, the Saints don't play well in those conditions on the road. But I may be sounding like a homer here, but I think this team is built a little bit differently than the way they have been built under Sean Payton. This is a team that runs the ball really well. They don't rely on Drew Brees as much, and they're playing really good defense. And so I actually think they can go to Buffalo and get a win. And I'm looking at a 23-17 game over Buffalo.
Wow.
Only game in the NFL this weekend where both teams have a winning record.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I struggle with this one for all the same reasons that he just said. It's almost one of those pick 'em games where if either team won, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it's a blowout either way. And my initial thought was that, you don't normally take a dome team on the road and in inclement weather. But like you said, they're built a little different this year. And I think what it really comes down to is Alvin Kamara. I don't think Ingram is going to have a lot of success, running that ball over the middle. I mean, up the middle and on that Buffalo defense. But Kamara, with his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield and make things happen, he makes one or two plays that swings field position. I think it's a similar score. I take the Saints on the road in a very good game.
Tough call. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's tough. I mean, I think the Bills will be ready though, because they're kind of used to those conditions, Rob. So, I'm kind of leaning towards them, but I would not be surprised if the Saints pulled off, only because of the fact that they're playing so well and they do have a lot of confidence. So we'll see. But that weather's going to be a huge, huge factor as far as how everything goes. And like I said, I know the Bills are kind of used to that too. So we'll see how that plays out. The next game, let's talk about the Vikings at the Redskins. And this is a pretty interesting game, because Kirk Cousins had a lot of, I don't want to say hype, gentlemen, but he had like a lot of expectations going into the season. And I don't know if it's coaching or what, and they've kind of flipped and had some challenges. And then the Vikings, as you know, some challenges with quarterback play. They've had some injuries with Dalvin Cook. So I'm not quite sure what to expect. I mean, so I'm going to lead to you, JQ, and tell us your thoughts as far as what's going to happen. The Vikings came out kind of hot. They looked like the best team in the NFL, and then they just kind of fell off. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, another one, that is very tough to call for me, because I look at that, and the Minnesota defense is flat out playing very good ball. And you don't know if you're going to get Jordan Reed back. Terrell Pryor has been a bust. I hate to say that, as him being a Buckeye alum. But then the other side of it is you got Breland and you got Norman over there, and you got, of course, he's still Case Keenum. So I don't care how good he's played. I'm just waiting on the other shoe to drop because he's Case Keenum.
I'm
just being honest with you. In that situation, I'm going to go with the home team. I'm going with Washington in a really close game to be able to make just one more play than Minnesota can. But, you know, I'm not super confident about this pick at all. I think it's going to be a hard-hitting, tough-nosed, I think low-scoring game. I'm going to take Washington.
Yeah. Good call. Rob, on you, man.
I agree. I think Washington 21-17, I think it's pretty smash-mouth football game. As JQ mentioned, Minnesota defensively, and Case Keenum is playing surprisingly well, too. I like the way Washington went on the road and beat Seattle, although Seattle kind of helped them out with those three missed field goals in that game, going on the road and beating Seattle. So I think they respond, come back home, and they beat another good football team in Minnesota at home, 21-17 Redskins.
Yeah,
which will put the Redskins back over 500.
I pretty much cut Blair Walsh off of fantasy after that abysmal performance, missing all those kicks, man. Because just get one of them, and I would have won. Man. That's a whole other conversation.
I did too.
Oh man, that was
and one got two.
frustrating. All right, I digress. All right, gentlemen, we got about 13 minutes here, and a huge concern in Indianapolis. I know they've made some moves. They actually cut Vontae Davis. I got to look at some more details as far as that today. And that may be another health thing. But, again, the top of the charts is Andrew Luck's health. And I guess I'm going to kick it to you, Rob, on this because there's some rumblings that there may be a change in leadership with the Colts. I don't know what's happening with Andrew Luck. He's just like, I don't want to be part of this or what. But this is becoming a little bit more serious than what we first anticipated, right, sir?
Well, absolutely. Obviously, the Colts didn't go into this season think they will be without Andrew Luck for the entire season, which it looked like at this point, even if he is healthy to play down the stretch, it's probably better off keeping him off the field. Right now he's on IR, and it looks like he is going to be out for the rest of the season. And there's some rumblings up there in Indianapolis. Jim Irsay saying it's a mind thing with Luck, that he should have been able to get on the field by now. And so there's a you know, there's a lot of, concern up there in that organization between the owner, the head coach, and the quarterback situation going forward. Obviously, we as outsiders don't really know what's going on behind the scenes from Andrew Luck's health standpoint, but it's not a good look if the owner is accusing him of, that he's healthy enough to play and that it's just a mind thing, or did he have a setback? But overall, the whole in the grand scheme of things, it's just not good for the Colts organization right now. They don't believe in Andrew Luck right now. Andrew Luck doesn't believe in the front office, and so there's a lot of concern. I think going forward, is he the guy for the job? Is he tough enough? And so I think there's definitely a lot of concern in going forward. And sometimes it is a mind thing, and but if it is, he's gonna have to get over that.
Yeah, good call. Go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, but as the owner, you can't come out there and say that, bro.
No, you can't
say that. You just can't say that to anybody. You can't let that be out there for somebody else to say that you said it, right? I don't understand why you say that. And then to your point about Levante Davis, he got into the tiff of, I got demoted, but he was like, I'm not playing well because I'm hurt, and I've been out here trying to play hurt for you guys. And I don't care what Coach P said, and then, he elected to have surgery, and then they cut him. So they've got some real issues going over there in Indianapolis. They're doing their best to pull the Cleveland Browns impression. Halloween is over. There's no need to dress up as anybody else. So, I don't know what Indianapolis is doing, but you just can't do that. And the thing about it, though, is that they can keep franchising Luck if it gets to the point. But they just gave him that extension, rather. So he's there. He's going to pretty much have to say, I'm not playing with you guys ever again for him to get out of that. But, it's just not a good look. It's just not what you do as an NFL organization. I don't know how they can repair it. What Ursa is saying that about it depends on how lucky he is with his forgiveness and his ability to move on, because it's really going to ultimately come down to him. Because when your owner says that about you, it trickles down to everybody else in the organization. So he's got to be the one to say, I'm bigger than that. I'm here for this organization long term, and let's go get it next year. So we'll have to see. But they bungled this from the get-go.
Yeah, it's been bad. All right, speaking of some organizations that are under some challenges, fellas, I'm in New York. I don't know who's hated more between the organizations here. Ben McAdoo is really hated up here, guys. And then you hear some rumblings that he's going to try to get the backup rookie quarterback hit over Eli. Now, granted, we know that Eli's had some challenges, but, you know, again, that's just not something that you say again. So it is interesting to hear my New Yorkers here. They cannot stand Ben McAdoo. They hate to do with the passion, man. They said he's in over his head. They think that he should be better served as a coordinator, not a coach. They're actually saying that getting rid of Tom Coughlin was a huge mistake, which I'm like, wow, I can't believe all that. But, yeah, there's a lot of hate.
They don't know what they want in New York.
They don't, but it is interesting to hear them talk because they're like, what? But yeah, that's just how much they hate your boy. And this is on the street, man. I'm, like, tripping out, man. So, the question, should the Giants part ways with Eli? And they're still like, yo, Eli's our guy right now. He's just the offense isn't suited him correctly because they're blaming the coach right now, which is kind of interesting because I would have thought it would be the other way. But, yeah, that's what's happening here in New York. So I don't know if you want to comment on that, Rob, and tell us how you feel, bro.
Well, I'll comment on the before we get to Eli Manning. In regards to Ben McAdoo, Giants made it to the playoffs last year. I mean, that was just last year. They were a playoff football team, and everybody was excited. Hey, we got an offensive guy calling his own plays. And they were excited about the future. The defense improved last year. And now all of a sudden they hit a rough patch. I mean, they had a ton of injuries on this football team too. I mean, almost their whole wide receiver
corps. That defense wasn't that great though either. But what have you done for me lately? But I'll give you that. Go ahead.
I understand that. But basically what I'm going to here is, do I think Ben McAdoo is a great leader? I don't think so. But do you fire? Do you try to get rid of a guy after he took the team last season to the playoffs and they off to a rough start this season? I don't know. It might be jumping the gun a little bit. But, you know, do I think he's a guy that can come in there and rally the troops? And, you know, I think a lot of things got to be set up well for him. But, you know, I don't know. It's, you know, the guy took the team to the playoffs last season, and now all of a sudden, you know, everybody wants to get rid of him. And in regards to Eli Manning, I mean, that offensive line is atrocious. They've lost their whole wide receiving core. Isn't it the top three receivers on this team all out?
Something like that.
This guy, he's working with nothing. So I'm going to say it's not time to get rid of Eli Manning. Do I think they need to be, looking toward the future? Absolutely. Eli Manning, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he's like 35 years old. So absolutely, you should be trying to figure out what you're going to be doing going forward. I don't know, Tom Brady and Drew Brees both playing the 40. I don't know if Eli Manning has got that in him. And, but, you know, we'll see. But I think you definitely need to be seeing, you know, coming toward the end of the season, if you're out of the playoff run, I think you definitely need to see what you have in a guy like Davis Webb to see if he could be that guy going forward, or if that's something you still need to address in the draft. And the reason why you want to do that, just as we talked about earlier, they got six potential first-round quarterbacks in this draft coming up. So you want to see what you have going forward. And there are some guys, even in this upcoming draft, that could be some nice picks in the second and third round, too. You look at a guy like Ryan Finley from North Carolina State. He's a guy that post scouts are giving some strong looks toward as well there in the second and third round. I think you want to see what you have in Webb, and you definitely want to prepare for the future, but I don't think it's time to get rid of Eli just yet. I know he's always got that strange look on his face, but like a deer in headlights look. I would say, bring him back next season. Yeah, this year's offensive line and their wide receiving core has been completely depleted. So I would say it's not time to get rid of him just yet.
Go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, and that's much more to add to that. I would agree with that. My only difference is, you know, when you got Jacinda Anderson coming out telling, two players, anonymously, I know is the sucker move. But when you got people in the locker room saying guys don't care anymore and they quit on the coach because he's throwing us under the bus all the time and he's not taking any accountability, when you got those guys saying that, it might be time to part ways with McAdoo. But I don't think get rid of Eli yet for all the points you just made. I mean, What do you want him really to do right now? I mean, you know, he doesn't have his wide receivers, he doesn't have an offensive line, he don't have a running game at all. I mean, you just can't, you know, you're asking him to turn water into wine up there in New York, and I know that's what New Yorkers expect, but I don't think Eli is the problem. I think they've got a problem fundamentally at the top, and sometimes you think the grass is green on the other side, and it's not. You got rid of Coughlin, say he was too strict, and, you know, players were getting mad at him for having to be there 15 minutes early and whatnot, but now look what you got for what you wish for. So, I reserve judgment on Eli, but I think McAdoo's got to go. He's lost that locker room.
You went from total opposite from, like, strict to, like, somebody that's, like, player's coach, apparently. And that did kind of maybe help him out. But, I definitely think that's affecting him this year. Like you talked about, Rob, I mean, as far as having injuries. But they got better defensively. You would say that. But then it's just interesting to hear, like, there is no love.
Last year's team on defense.
Yeah, still. I know. But I'm just telling you. But still – yeah, JQ said, there's no love, man. The locker room is pretty much shot at this juncture, man. So, it's a disaster, man. So, awesome.
You know, Ben McAdoo has that deer in headlights look like Eli does, too.
Yep.
Yeah, they're both like the same. They're both the same, which is crazy. So, you know, at least somebody's got to know what's happening. But all good. You get to have both of them have that look. We got 3 minutes and 48 seconds here. Let's do our fantasy shout-outs, Rob.
All right, let me grab my notes here. Fantasy shout-outs. Here we go. League number one, the biggest win of the week, William from Madison, Wisconsin, Smoking Aces over Eagles Chick for Life, 137.32 to 109.16. Yours truly, my team, Black and Gold, still holding out first place at 8-1. League number two, biggest win of the week, straight up beatdown. Turned down, Chester from New Orleans, 176.52 over ATL Black Belt, 63.02. On to the playoffs in first place, 7-2 record in league number two.
Yeah.
In league number three, Andre again, as biggest win of the week, Andre's Rise Up Felks, 135.92 to 96 over Turned Up. JQ, Ohio Players in first place at 8-1 in league number three. And in league number four, my team, the Purple Knights, had the biggest win of the week, 163.96 to 63.82 over Birds Flew South. And Purple Knights, my team, holding out first place with a 6-3 record in league number four. And fantasy basketball, the Naptown Unibrows, Matthew from Indianapolis over Madhouse on Madison, 7-1. And his team also is in first place, Naptown Unibrows, 20-3-1 in fantasy basketball. Those are our fantasy shout-outs of the week. Obviously, there's still a lot of football to be played and, of course, a lot of basketball to be played. So let's have some fun, people.
Let's keep it going. Yes, all right, Rob, set up the OT portion here. We got about a minute and 50 seconds. Go set that up, Rob.
All right, we're getting ready to go into our OT portion of the show. Unfortunately, we can't bring you this portion of the show live, so click on the same link on tomorrow. We got some more NFL. We got some NBA coverage coming up here as well. So click on the same link, and we'll get you that information on tomorrow. Next week, we should be back on the air on a Wednesday night next week. 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You don't want to miss it. Obviously, we'll catch up on everything that's happening. A big college football weekend this weekend. So we definitely will get you caught up on that action and get you prepared for the following week in both college and the NFL. Good night, people.
Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us. Join us for the OT portion. Holla at you.
That's all you got, JQ? That's all you got, bro?
Hey, I was just trying to make sure I was in on the time.
You got like 40 seconds, bro. You good, man. You can add some thoughts to that, bro. Go ahead, man.
Oh, okay. I was trying to be respectful of the time. You know, so all to my Ohio State people out there, hang in there. Be easy, because I know we spoiled. And we feel like we're supposed to win them all, but hang in there. It's okay. You know, you've got another good recruiting class coming there. We'll find a way back next year. I think it's over for us this year. Just go ahead and let that go. No, there's no way a two-loss Ohio State team gets in. Too much other things happening this year. So we'll be all right. So, you know, keep your head up like Tupac, and let's keep this thing moving. Join us next week.
Man, Ohio State still got a chance to win the Big Ten, man. What the fans whining about? They still got a chance.
Hey, man, listen,
they still in the Big Ten run.
Man, if it ain't talking about titles, then that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about titles.
You're not. Alabama don't even win a national championship every year.
We're talking about titles. When you know at that point you don't have a chance to go to the title, you're right. They can still win the Big Ten and then play in year six. It is. But when you come into it thinking, you know, we've got the team and enough parts to make a run in the national championship and it's over in the early November, it's hard to get back on that, you know, okay, let's just, you know, it's like you're selling for the Big Ten title only. And I know you're right. It's still a major accomplishment, but it's still a kick in the chest to get beat down like that and have your hopes getting dashed like that in early November.
Yeah. It's all good. Good job. Way to console the crew, man. That's what it's all about, JQ. Way to get the Buckeye Nation back, man. So we'll keep it going here. All right. We are ready to talk about some NBA here. And let's kick it right off, Rob, with the Oklahoma OKC. So how do you think the Thunder experiment will work out this season, sir? What do you think about this?
I think they eventually figure it out and turn it around. Obviously, getting off to a 4-6 start. I think we referenced this in some previous shows. We talked about how the Miami Heat in that first year with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, how they started off 9-8. Mm-hmm. I think at some point, you got to realize here, Westbrook took this team to the playoffs last year with basically him and a bunch of role players. And so I think he's even trying to figure out how to incorporate George and Carmelo into the grand scheme of things into that team. But I think as the season goes along, I still eventually think they will figure it out forward. I think last I checked, they were in 9th or 10th place in the West, but it's still early. I think with Westbrook and Paul George alone, even if they took Carmelo out of the mix, this team should be a playoff team somewhere in that top five, the mix. And then Carmelo would be still a lethal shooter from an offensive standpoint, still a liability defensively. But I think at some point they figure out a way to mesh and get this thing going. And, you know, anytime you're in team sports, you have to have, you can have all the talent in the world, but you have to have the chemistry as well. And yep. I just think it's just taking them a little time to figure it out. But I think they will eventually. Well, are they going to the championship? No. Nobody's going to beat Golden State. But I think they figure it out and get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I love how the word experiment is in that sentence, in that statement. Go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, he talked about the 9-8 with the Heat. But another piece of that is you look at them, I believe they're in the top five in defense. So when you're playing defense like that, you still give yourself a chance. But the biggest thing, and I think it happened with Miami, where Dwayne Wade had to come out and say, you know what, LeBron, this is your team, and we're going to go as far as you take us. That's going to have to happen at some point in Oklahoma City where they develop a pecking order of who's one, who's two, and these three. So I believe the last time I looked at it, they were all averaging 17 shots a game, which is great in terms of, you know, we're all trying to, you know, do for one another and sacrifice. But that doesn't always translate when you're on the court and you have to find somebody who has the hot hand or who is going to be your closer. And to your point, it's Russell Westbrook, and it's all well and great to do that through the first three quarters. But at some point, you have to say, okay, here's the guy. You take the shot, or if you get double team, kick out to me, but don't defer and try to say, not try to make it be more of a, you know, co-partnership amongst the three of us. They got to get to a point where they go ahead and say, okay, man, we came here. This is your team. We're going to go as far as you take us. You know, let's go. And I don't know if they can do that, you know, because, I mean, Paul George and Carmelo Anthony are stars in their own right as well. But I think it's going to take that. I don't know if they can all average 17 points a game and say we're doing this all equally. At some point, you got to have an alpha dog and a leader and go ahead and go after them. And I believe it's Russell Westbrook. And I don't think any of us can deny that. But they got to get to that point where they're all comfortable with that in the locker room.
Yeah, it's a good call. I mean, I think there's a couple things to mention about this because, again, we'll talk about how well Kyrie Irving's playing because, you know, if Russell's the guy, then, yeah, he's the guy. And they just got to, like, jump on board and kind of ride his coattails. So, you know, right now, like you said, Rob, I think they're trying to figure out a couple things. But like you said, JQ, one guy's got to be the man, and then if one guy's having an off night, whatever, you know, we know who the ball's going to, basically, bottom line. So, you know, again, no one's
right.
crying for them at this juncture, but it is an experiment that has to be worked out.
Well, they have to realize that it's definitely Russell Westbrook's team. He's got a
yeah.
– I mean, he's a guy that's coming off an MVP season. I mean, they
mm-hmm.
have to realize that it's got to be his team. And
I
Paul George and Carmelo's got to find their place, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yep. I mean, it's more of a – we'll see. Like I said, I'm not crying for them by any means. But, you know, it is going to be interesting to see how that progresses because I'm not a fan of Russell Westbrook as far as not the basketball wise. I'm saying like as far as I still wonder as far as how he's able to incorporate getting everyone involved. So that's gonna be his challenge. He's gonna have to learn how to do that, but then still dominate. So there's a way how to do that. Like I said, so that's not a shot at him. I'm just saying that there's got to be a balance for him as well too. So yeah, that's what you know. I want to make sure. I'm trying to say this like as diplomatically as possible too, because I'm not saying he's not the man. He's not because he's the MVP like you talked about. But again, you know, there's got to be ways for him to like dominate and also be able to incorporate more for the team like you talked about chemistry for sure. Speaking of that and good chemistry, let's talk about the Warriors. And the Warriors, they roll over a pretty good defensive team in the Timberwolves last night, and they were without Kevin Durant. And this kind of brought back old memories of how they were running and gunning. So, you know, I don't know if you have anything to comment about this, JQ, but just it was a thing of beauty to see the Warriors do their thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, they are who they are, and it's not like it's any shock that they're doing that to people, even without Kevin Durant. They just have a scary, ridiculously good team that play for each other and are fundamentally sound. And even when you feel like you get a good role going against them, they get on a hot streak, and they totally just, oh, you had a 7-point lead. Well, guess what? That 7-point lead is now an 8-point deficit, and it happens in the blink of an eye. You know, it's just that's just who they are. They're the class of the league, and everybody knows it. And I think the thing is that we try, you know, you get kind of fatigue of saying, oh, they're so great. Who's going to finally, you know, reach up and grab them and bring them back to earth? And you got to get to a point where unless somebody gets hurt or they just get into a fist fight in the locker room and they just stop playing for each other, that's not going to happen. Like, it's not going to happen. They are a cohesive, well-oiled machine, and it's going to take a heroic effort to knock them off not only in a regular season game but in the playoff series. So it is what it is. The Warriors are just ridiculous.
Yeah,
Herculean is the word I was looking for. Sorry.
And the Timberwolves are a pretty good defensive team inside Tom Thibodeau, if I said his name correctly. And they were just, like, on fire, too, man. So that was kind of surprising for that vantage point. You didn't have that 40-point quarter. So what are your thoughts about that, Rob?
Yeah, man, chicks love the long ball in Golden State, man. You know, they won.
Marcy's back at the dance in the background over here. She's dancing about the Warriors, so she's happy. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, you got to realize this team won 73 games the year before they acquired Kevin Durant. So
right.
And then you add Kevin Durant to the mix. That's just extremely scary. I mean, Minnesota is a team that's, you know, we all knew they were going to be improved this season. They're off to a 7-4 start, so they definitely you're actually seeing the improvement from them, and they're in the top half of the Western Conference to start the season here. But man, I mean, Golden State made them boys look like they were, you know, top of the draft kind of team in Minnesota. 125-101 without Kevin Durant. They got off to a slow start at the beginning of the season here, Golden State. But you look at these last 4 to 5 games, they've been really impressive in the way they're just handling teams and destroying teams. So we're starting to see that team starting to get back in the groove here a little bit. And like I said, this was a 73-win team even prior to acquiring Kevin Durant. So they don't need Kevin Durant to beat teams. They really don't. It's just an added luxury.
Yep, Swaggy P was a good addition. They kept a lot of good, you know, adding draft picks and other things. So it's all good. All right, let's move on.
But the difference is Kevin Durant really sets them apart come playoff time, you know, and that's where they really needed him.
Easily. Yep. All right, gentlemen. So let's talk about who is the better player. So you're looking at two really talented people, players, and the Greek Freak and Porzingis. And right now, I'm going to say that it's definitely the Greek Freak. Not to say that Porzingis is not going to be there, but this guy is just, you know, just short of, you know, obviously LeBron and whatnot too, but he is definitely doing his thing right now too. So, and Rob, I'm going to see how this is going to adjust too, because I'm pretty sure at some point we're going to see a Ben Simmons or whatever on this, in the league as well too. But right now, I like what the Greek Freak is doing. I do like Porzingis as well. Very talented. But just because of everything that's happening and how he's kind of changing the game, he's got, like, a lot of confidence. And that's not a shot at Porzingis, because my New York folks, you know, there's a lot of love for you, so don't come after me. But, you know, right now you are seeing kind of a nice revolution as far as the next up-and-coming set of players, if you will, too. Like I said, even adding a Ben Simmons as well. But that's what I see right now. This guy is poised to, like we talk about, even possibly win the next MVP and just kind of carry that team to the next level for sure. So what are your thoughts on that, JQ?
Yeah, I mean, Porzingis is a better scorer right now, but in all other categories, I take the Greek Freak. He's just, yeah, like I said, he's a freak of nature, and he's still learning. But those things that you can't, you know, teach so much, you know, something that, like Rob said, he's got a 12-foot wingspan. You know, he plays defense. Mm. He blocks shots. He rebounds. He has handles almost like a guard at that size, which is just ridiculous. I mean, if they can get him to get a decent jump shot, he's going to be darn near unguardable.
Yeah.
Right now, he's just on another level right now. But that's nothing to take away from the unicorn. He's fantastic in his own right. And if you're the NBA, you got to be really excited about the young guys that are coming up, like you said, with Ben Simmons as well, because you got to have something else to kind of point to and have something to look forward to, because the Warriors are going to probably win it again. So that much is probably a foregone conclusion unless something crazy happens. But, you know, you got these other storylines that are emerging around the league, and it's only good for the league.
If you, like you said, JK, if he hits a jump shot, Lord have mercy, this guy will be unstoppable. I mean, that's what we're going to work on, man. Don't give him any ideas, man. That dude is already, you know, man. Rob, what say you, man?
Well, I mean, Porzingis, obviously, as you can see, he's out of Carmelo Anthony's shadows right now, and he is now the man in New York City when it comes from a basketball standpoint with the Knicks.
Yes, he is.
And you look at their team, they're even playing better overall as a team. They're 6-5.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's still a lot of basketball to be played, but they were actually in the playoffs as the season ended playoffs started today. So they've shown a lot of improvement, and Porzingis is kind of leading the way there. Milwaukee is the Greek Freak, as JQ mentioned. I mean, the guy's got freak in his nickname, so you know he's a beast. And, and I mean, he put up 40 Cooper. Points on Tuesday night and a loss to Cleveland. As a team, Milwaukee hasn't been playing as well as expected. I thought they would be a lot better. Obviously, still early, as we just talked about. And they're 4-6 as well. They just acquired Eric Bledsoe, so maybe that can help them as well. But I can make a very strong case right now that the Greek Freak might have surpassed LeBron James as the best all-around player in the NBA right now. You can really make a strong case for that. With his wingspan, when he's giving you defensively, I mean, every time you look around, he's got anywhere between 35 to 40 points, and all the things he does on the floor, the way he impacts the game. Obviously, his team is not there yet, but I still think come playoff time, you'll see Milwaukee there. And you know, possibly be a team that can make it to the second round of the playoffs this season. Obviously, Eric Bledsoe could be a great addition too. But I have to go. Like I said, the guy's got freak in his nickname, so you got to go with the Greek Freak as being a better player right now. But I like what JQ. I mean, I'm sorry, what Andre just talked about. Ben Simmons, another guy that's doing a lot. A guy that's got a LeBron kind of magic kind of flair to his game. And, well, you know, even though he never took LSU to the tournament, but even the Sixers look much improved as a team, but with he and Joel Embiid, they got a 6-4 record holding out a number 5 spot in the Eastern Conference right now. So he's a guy that could be in the mix here going forward, but right now it's the Greek Freak.
But they don't even have folks yet in Philadelphia.
That's what's crazy about it.
They don't have
folks
yet.
For Philly. I'm going to say, too, the only person that – there's a quote that the only person that could stop Michael Jordan was Dean Smith. And that's the thing I'm going to use for your LSU coach that stopped Ben Simmons. That's my little comment for that, too. That's why I didn't read him. Coaching was a challenge.
It was that old Johnny Jones.
Johnny Jones was coach. We're almost moving. We're doing a great time here, guys. I want to get these last two topics here. Let's talk about Lonzo Ball. And the question that's posed is he playing too passive? And I'm going to kick it to JQ about this, too, because I know you're a Lakers fan. I want to comment because there's a couple things I want to say about this, too. Do you think he's playing too passive or just kind of like this with the league, with kind of what's happening right now with his pops and everything that's surrounding him and everything?
I think that's a part of it. But even before that happened with his brother over in China, which is just the dumbest thing of all time. That's why I text you guys like, come
easily.
On, man. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
The thing about it is when he got drafted, especially with that, you know, that funky shot that he has, unless he remakes that, he's not going to be a consistently good shooter in this league. But he does a good job, I think, for the most part, of getting them into solid plays and giving the balls to guys who can score, like Kuzma, like Ingram, Randall coming off the bench, Clarkson. Like, he's trying to get them to the scorers, the ball, so he's not really looking for his shot. But at some point, in order to loosen up some of the defense, some of those passing lanes, he's going to have to be a threat on the pick and roll. If I can go under the pick and roll every time because you're no threat to shoot the jumper, then it's going to make it that much harder for you to get those passing angles and to get those assist numbers up and to get them in a better flow. He's doing a decent job. He's just got to find a better line of when to be aggressive as opposed to, you know, trying to set everybody up. And you know what? You can say that for a lot of young point guards when they come into the league. Some of them do too much and they shoot a bad percentage and they don't have good assist numbers. And then you get people like Ball who say, okay, you know, I'm here to be selfless and get everybody else involved, but you can also have a detriment to your offense when you don't look to be aggressive enough to take your shot. So I would say he's tending to be a little passive, but I don't think it's an overwhelmingly thing. I think he's still just trying to find his footing in this league, and that's what a lot of young point guards go through.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rob, your thoughts.
Yeah, obviously he's not shooting the ball really well either. And I mean, you look at tonight's game against the Wizards, so 3-for-12 from the field, 1-for-7 behind a three-point line. And he's really going to have to get with a really good shooting coach this offseason to perfect that shot going forward from the NBA level. You know, you got guys like Steph Curry, 6'3", but he can get that shot off a guy that's 7 feet tall. And so he's really going to have to get with a shooting coach because when he's open, he can really shoot the basketball. But he's really going to have to get with someone to really help him from a shooting standpoint. But as far as distributing the basketball, the way he passes the basketball, you can see he's just natural at that. And, that's truly his gift. And going forward, you know, I don't think there's going to be any questions about that part of his game. Is really going to be how he can impact the game from a scoring standpoint. And could he be a guy that can eventually be at least a 17-point-a-night scorer in the NBA? And I think that's what they're going to need from him for them to be successful. I think you're going to want him to be a 17-point game, somewhere around 10 to 11 assists a night. That's the kind of player you're really hoping for. On a minimum is what you're hoping for when you draft a guy like that with the number two pick overall. So can he do that for him from a scoring standpoint and still shoot a high percentage? So that's going to be the story going forward to see if he can be that type of player for the Lakers.
You know, he's like a black Ricky Rubio early on where Rubio couldn't shoot. He is. If you look at Rubio, he couldn't shoot early either, but he was fantastic dishing the ball and getting the offense together, but his shot was horrible in Minnesota. That's who he reminds me of right now. Like, you know, you see the flashes, but it's just not a consistent shot. And Rob is 100% on point. I don't know why he didn't get a shooting coach this offseason coming into it, but I digress on that. But, yeah, he's got to get somewhere. And, you know, the passing is there for him. He sees the court well, but he's got to get he's got to remake that shot. That you know, sidewinding, whatever he calls it, is not going to get it done.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go a different direction, gentlemen, because, you know, I think that it's tough because – he's playing passive, and I know everyone's kind of gunning for him, and that's kind of it is what it is. And that's going to make him a better player in the long run, JQ. Right now, he's taking all the lumps. We talked about that last week. But I do wonder if he has kind of like a I know Magic is there. You kind of have someone to lean on because it kind of reminds me this is kind of a stretch too, like a Rajon Rondo. Because when Rondo came in, he didn't have that great of a shot, and he had a pretty good supporting cast of, you know, guys around him with, you know, Kevin Garnett, and more veterans kind of like get him into shape,
yeah.
you know, to kind of help, hey, this is what you need to do, you know, and lean on us. And then they kind of like ascended like Rajon's play, which is, you know, kind of what I think that, you know, Lonzo needs some veterans to kind of help him, you know, to kind of like steady the course here. Because, again, I think he's got a lot of potential. Like you talked about, you know, he sees the court. You talked about, you know, obviously getting that shooting them, you know, down. But, again, I just think there's a couple players that can kind of help him to kind of get to that next level too, for whatever reason too. So that's what I think about it. Like I said, I think he's going to be fine, JQ, because he's going through all this crap right now. So, you know, again, it may not seem like it's good because, you know, these bad nights, and he's got an even keeled personality. He's not like too down on himself. You know, whenever he went to the, you know, playing against one of the, you know, he's playing like a lot of great point guards, man. Kyrie ate him up. John Wall mm-hmm. ate him up. You know, so eventually, you know, he's going to learn from that, and you're going to take your lumps. And he's not too down. He's not like, man, I'm feeling bad on myself. He's like, hey, I got to play better. And you know it. So he's still doing the things that, like you said, Rob, you know, for him to get a better shot, that's going to come. But he's already got, do what you do well. You do well with assists. You know, keep doing that. But, you know, eventually, I don't know what the Lakers can do as far as getting some more players to kind of help him out from that perspective. But right now, do what you do. He's going to be just fine in the long run. Like I said, we're not crying for him by any means. And I'm sure you'd rather have Lonzo Ball than D'Angelo Russell, right, JQ? Am I right with that? Or no?
I mean, yeah, because they all talk about the leader that he is and getting them set up, and they all love him. And then they did not love D'Angelo Russell. They just didn't. So, no, I agree with what you're saying. You got a star-driven point guard league right now, and he's going to have some bumps. Right. That's what I said. I'm not killing him. I'm not at home like, oh, man, Lonzo Ball's the reason why they're losing. Because you take that Boston game, they got down, they came back, but when you watch them, they didn't have a closer. And that's what we talked about before with Oklahoma City, letting Westbrook be that closer. They didn't have a closer. Boston does, and Kyrie, and that's the difference. They were able to pull away. So that's a young team still trying to figure it out. I'm not saying the Lonzo Ball is a bust. You know, I'm not going off Stephen A. Smith and getting carried away because, it's, you know, you're 10, 11 games into his rookie year, and he has nobody. Luol Deng is not the guy to lean on. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just not who he is. So, I mean, you got to go with that
from a perspective of walking through that door.
If Magic walking through, he ain't walking through with no jersey on. So you're right. Yeah. He just got you're right. You're absolutely right. He needs some veterans, and that's the plan, and that's always been the plan. I think for them, they just can't be. They don't want to be picking top three again. They want to see progress of being picking maybe 10th on the edge of that lottery, where you can get two free agents. You know, vet guys are looking and says, you know what? They're not as horrible as they were. If me and such go there with that young cast they got, we can make a difference. That's what they have to do. That's their goal. The playoffs is not realistic. The goal is to not be picking third. Be picking 10th and show other veterans around the league that I can go to L.A. with that supporting cast and win because we have Lonzo Ball running the point. And I, if, like you said, Dre, if he can lean on me and I can get him some of this wisdom and I can, you know, and I can be the closer for that team, we can make beautiful music together. So that's the goal for the Lakers, for me as a fan.
You know what's scary?
I tell you that Kyle
George. Kyle Kuzma's good too, but Rob, I'm going to say, if they get a Paul George, that team changes dramatically. Because he instantly becomes the guy, bro. You know what I'm saying? And then from there, because I know Brandon Ingram, he's not quite there yet. He's showing a lot of promise. He's not ready. But if you have a Paul George that can kind of groom that, man, that is the perfect fit for that squad. I'm not saying they're going to go playoffs, JQ, but you talk about a situation where now you're looking like a squad that's like you got your guy. He's the number one option, and he's got somebody to feed him the ball. I'm telling you. That is the piece that I think that the Lakers will – I mean, like I said, it's not like, you know, the whole like the whole squad. But I'm saying that's the piece that's going to, like, catapult them to the next level, I think. That's just Andre's perspective, too. Go ahead, Rob. I didn't mean to
– Don't forget about LeBron.
Rob, go ahead.
But Kyle Kuzma, I tell you, has got to be one of the steals of the draft. And I know this is a guy that I've talked about a lot in our pre-draft talk. And surprised he even go a little bit higher in the draft because, man, he was really – putting together some nice pre-draft workouts. And so I think the Lakers got a steal with him. I mean, is he going to be a superstar? No, but I think he's going to be one of those kind of guys that you want to have on your team that can do a lot of different things for you, are very versatile. And so that is a really good draft pick. And I think you're going to see from going forward, I don't know if Julius Randle fit the Lakers going forward and how long he's going to be with them.
He's done.
But and he was the guy that was the number 7 pick of the draft. Kyle Kuzma is going to bring so much more to that organization,
yeah.
I think, than they were going to get out of Julius Randle. So that was a really good pick by the Lakers. Still, that they were able to get him that part of the draft, because I really thought he could have been somewhere between that 15 to 20 slot based on the way he's performing, you know, in the pre-draft workouts and things of that nature. So that's a really good pick and a really good guy you want to have on your team going forward for the Los Angeles Lakers. And I'm not going to say
Julius,
he's going to have the impact like Draymond Green, but he's going to be a really good steal for the Lakers. And the Lakers, I think the Paul George thing, I think it's all going to come down to how that works in Oklahoma City. If Oklahoma City is competing and making it to the Western Conference Finals, I think he gives them a shot. But everybody knows he's from L.A. and wouldn't mind going back to Los Angeles. So that's going to be very interesting to watch, too.
Yeah, you talk about Julius Randle real quick, Dre. Julius Randle is basically this year's D'Angelo Russell in the fact that he's going to be the trade bait that they use to get from underneath Luol Deng's contract if they can't, you know, negotiate a buyout where we give you Randle so you can take, you know, the last 2 years of Deng's contracts off the books. And now – you get rid of that logjam there a little bit, the power forward. You go ahead and let Kuzma do his thing. You clear some of that space off from Deng, and you have the opportunity to get one or maybe two max free agents if it works out. I'm not saying it's going to, but you give yourself the kind of cap space to make that happen. So I agree with you. Randle is not long for the Lakers. Everything he's doing is an addition, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him attached to Luol Deng to get them up from underneath that contract.
Mm-hmm. What else were you going to say, JQ? I think you're talking about something else. Is that the one thing you were going to talk about?
That was it. I was just piggybacking off of Rob's point about Randle. I agree.
Okay, cool. All right, two more subjects, and we'll wrap this up, gentlemen. Really quickly, Kevin Love played his best basketball Tuesday night, Rob.
I think, you know, it may be kind of hard to say it was at his best game ever, but I think, obviously, you know, Cleveland lost tonight. So we're talking about the way he played two nights ago. But the way he played two nights ago is what they're going to need out of him going forward. I mean, that's what they just need him. I mean, this, when you look at some of the guys that they've signed some veteran players that are on the tail end of their careers, Dwayne Wade, Jeff Green, Derrick Rose. So they're going to need Kevin Love to play like the way he did. And they still barely beat Milwaukee in that game. So this is a team, they're going to really need Kevin Love, and they're going to really need to get Isaiah Thomas back as quickly as possible. So I don't know if this is the best game of his career, but that's what they're going to need out of Kevin Love going forward if they expect to be a contender in the Eastern Conference again.
Yeah, agreed. I would say it's impressive because I believe he scored those points without recording a three-point shot, which is a big part of his game, which makes it even more impressive.
From that standpoint, no threes.
That's why I would say that might be his most impressive game, as you know, in his career, because he didn't include the 3-point shot, which is ultimately, you know, the great equalizer. That makes it more impressive. But I agree, they got to get him more elbow touches, more paint touches. They got to kind of remake how that team is going to play. They definitely need Isaiah Thomas back, but they need the Minnesota, you know, Kevin
that's
Love to come
about.
Forward and make him
that's
more
exactly
focal point
of
that
you
offense.
Of that. Yeah. Just like he was in Minnesota. That's the player that he was all the time. Why did it take him so long to figure this out? That's my thing. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Because
it's
LeBron.
That's exactly what I thought.
Well, he was the man in Minnesota.
It's LeBron.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's LeBron. And the way LeBron plays as being the ball-dominant kind of player he is, they want to surround him with shooters where he can get in the middle of the lane and collapse that defense and kick out the three-point shooters to swing the ball. And you can do that, but when you do that to Kevin Love, you take that away from the other things that he can do also on the court. So they got to find a way to balance that piece of LeBron and have him do other things where they can let Kevin Love shine in other areas besides being a three-point marksman. That's why Kevin Love has kind of been marginalized. And Chris Bosh said it when he went to Miami. It happened to him, too. So they got to get back to that a little bit of letting Kevin Love be more of a complete player and not just being a somewhat of a rebounder and a three-point specialist. He can't just live in that corner.
Yeah, head to
Tuesday night, 32
score.
Points, 16 rebounds, had 8 offensive rebounds. And, you know, you all make a good point about his Minnesota days. I don't know if you recall, but Kevin Love had a lot of games where he had like 28 points and 20 rebounds.
He was a double-double machine,
back
bro.
In Minnesota.
Easily.
I mean, he had a lot of 20-20 nights, not just 10-10.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Minnesota, he had a lot of 20-20 nights. And he came close to that on Tuesday night where he had 32 points, 16 rebounds. 9 of 14 from the field, 8 offensive rebounds. So he was hitting the offensive glass. That's what they're going to need out of him. They're going to need that kind of production if they're going to be back to being a contender again, which so far this season they're not looking like one.
But again, the same thing with Oklahoma City. When you get all those new players, it takes time. It takes time to gel and get good chemistry and find out what guys want the ball on the court and, you know, those kind of how they like the screen set. Like, it just takes a little time, but we're in a instant gratification society where if it didn't happen yesterday, then it's never going to happen, right? So we just got to tell everybody to take a deep breath and let them figure it out.
So more than likely, they'll figure out something going forward.
We're not crying for them, but again, you guys have, like you said, when you said Minnesota, Kevin Love, and the average, I mean, that's what I thought about. I'm like, this dude is marginalized, like you said, Rob. So again, they got to figure that mess out because you got a player that just getting wasted. That's just wasted talent, 100%, man. So very disappointing. But Kevin Love,
I think it's part of him too.
I don't know.
I definitely think it's part of him too, embracing the situation he's in too. So I think it's also part Kevin Love. He's got to have a mindset to come out and be aggressive every night too. So I think it's definitely
ball-dominant guy in LeBron James though. So you can't give me the ball. I mean, that's LeBron James. Look at Kyrie. Yeah, Kyrie left for that purpose. So again, I'm just saying.
You got to see a mindset of aggression from Kevin Love on a nightly basis, though. I think with Kyrie Irving, even when he was with Cleveland, you saw aggressiveness from him when he had the ball in his hands. And because you had a lot of nights where Kyrie was still scoring 30-some points a night, even with Cleveland. So you always saw him being aggressive. I don't think you always see that like Kevin Love. So I think some nights he's too passive. And I think some of them got to be on him too. And I think he needs to be a lot more aggressive. Is he going to be the number one option over LeBron James? No. But I think there's a lot of opportunities for him to play a lot more aggressive than what he normally does. And that's what they're going to need out of him.
I mean, I'll agree with you because I still think that, you know, that it's tough because, you know, with Kevin, you're probably the fourth option because you got, you know, J.R. Smith wants his touches, you know, this show.
Stop it.
And
come on, man.
Listen to this point.
LeBron James is ball dominant, but he's very unselfish, too.
He isn't selfish.
You think the fourth option is J.R. Smith?
Hold on.
Man, I know they smoke weed in New York.
Let me try to pull this together. What I'm saying is that I do agree that you have to want the ball. But again, there's no way to get out of this one. I am saying that. You saw how he played, right? How Kevin Love played. That was one of his better games, too. So, again, it does show you that, you know, that, hey, if you put him in the position to succeed, like you talked about, they had nothing left. Hey, all right, this is it. So I agree with you, Rob. He has to, you know,
I tell you what, if they ever get in the meeting and they say that he's the third or fourth option and they say that J.R. Smith is the second option, he should break a backboard. He should throw a chair. He should walk out.
I wasn't saying he was the second option. What I'm saying is I think he wasn't getting touches, so that's all I'm saying. I wasn't saying he was the second option. Totally missed that point. Oh, man. I was not saying that at all. Let me quickly get out of this because I'm not going to,
quicksand.
LeBron James versus Michael Jordan, the better clutch player. In our era, I'm still going to go with Michael Jordan really quickly because this guy's always been the setting for the league, and that's not a shot at LeBron. That's just, you know, guys always had some clutch shots, some classic shots, even changing the game, man, from his perspective as far as defending and whatnot, too. So Michael Jordan is my choice. I don't know what to take next. Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, yeah, hands down. But when we talk about being a clutch player, I mean, how many times Michael Jordan has hit big shots for the Chicago Bulls? and helped them win six championships. It's not even close. It's definitely Michael Jordan. I think you can make a case for LeBron James being a better all-around player. He impacts the stat sheet in a lot of areas that Jordan didn't. But yeah, when you're talking about clutch performer, it's definitely Michael Jordan, no doubt about it.
No question. The shove on Byron Russell, Game 6 to beat Utah. I mean, that just stands out. I mean, there's no question. I get it because, you know, LeBron, and you're right. It's because LeBron impacts the game in so many other areas that, you know, we always want the next thing to be the greatest thing. And sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. And it's okay to say that it is. It's okay to say that it's close, but it's not overcoming that great thing. I think Michael still, clutch-wise, nobody is taking anybody over Michael. If you got one person to get you a bucket and with the game on the line, with the way he can perform, his competitive juices, Michael Jordan all day, every day, twice on Sunday.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure sharing the field of battle with you. I was not trying to say that J.R. Smith the second option. I'm just going to say that out to everyone. That's not what I was trying to say. I was trying to just definitely want to get his touch. That's all. I will play it too as well. But go ahead. I'm just saying.
Me and Rob are doing that thing on the
show, man. Remember how y'all was replaying that Les Miles comment of me? And it's time for to go back and replay that comment for Andre about J.R. Smith being a second option.
I didn't say he was a second option. No, I said he was a second option.
I got you, Rob. I got you.
Yeah.
Wrap the show up, dude.
We gotta go back. You gotta put that on the intro next week.
Oh my goodness.
Oh man.
Wrap the show up. Yeah,
I mean, that was 5.1 points a game.
Let it go, Rob. Let it go.
Oh man.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure.
Y'all
wrap
know.
This up, Rob. Come on.
Huh?
Wrap this up, man.
Wrap
Come
it
on.
Up, Rob.
All right, people, ladies and gentlemen, we had a lot of fun. Thank you all for tuning in yet again to the greatest sports show on the planet. Join us on next Wednesday night. We're back to our normal night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. You don't want to miss it. We're going to capture everything that's happening in the sports world. But we'll have you ready. Recap another great weekend of football. Get you set for the following week. You don't want to miss us on next week. Good night, people.
Yep. Holla at us, Des Moines. We see you out there. Corn fed. I hate you, but you know what it is. I appreciate y'all for tuning in. Holla at you next week.
he giving a shout out to Hawkeye Nation.
Hey, listen. Wow. I'm just trying to be like you. I'm just trying to pick a random spot in the world and just throw it out there too, you know. So, you know, Oxford, Mississippi, stand
why
up.
Why not?
We holler at you next
Wyoming.
Week.
Stand up, Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Come on, Pierre.
Stand
Where
up.
You at?
Stand up, Yakima, Washington. Stand up.
Yakima,
okay.
Washington.
That's a market.
Biz Mark, how you rolling?
Tri-Cities. Oh, I love it. Keep it going, JQ. All right, guys.
Nah,
it's been a fun week as always. Before I get in trouble, thank you for sharing. I appreciate you switching days from the fellows. It was kind of rough, man. So, but fun time.
Oh, absolutely.
And we'll get it going. So next week too. So get some rest, and we will see you guys same time for next week. As always, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Be good. I'm getting gifts now.
All right, man. Holla at y'all later.
Thanks, guys. Be good.
Good night, people.
All right, man.
Good night.